There you go. There you go. There you go. Thank you. All right.
Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to State of the Arts with Michael Sterling and Andrew David James, only on LA Talk Radio.
And here we are. I am not Andrew David James.
Hey, me too.
But will you be today?
I will be Andrew David James today.
Yes, just for like an hour?
But I'm going to work my way up to Michael Sterling someday.
Oh, okay. Well, then there you go. So you got a lot of work to do, man. How are you, buddy?
Doing good, man. How you doing?
I am swell, thank you.
You saw a lot of theater this week, didn't you?
I did.
You were out and about.
Out and about. Yeah, we'll talk about that in a minute. It was so much fun and unexpected, I think. Last night in particular, I went to the opening of Grey Gardens, which is the spectacular musical that was first premiered on Broadway in 2006.
Yeah.
And got 9 nominations and 3 wins out of it that year.
Wow.
And it didn't play very long on Broadway, however. It just played about 400 performances, 300 performances. And at any rate, this is a brand new, refreshed production of it that is done by the Center Theater Group at the Amundsen Theater with Betty Buckley and Rachel York.
Wow.
And I must say, last night, one of the celebrities arrivals, and there weren't, it wasn't like crazy celebrity time, but all of them were good ones. You know? But the one that turned everybody's head when she walked in from the plaza into the theater was Angela Lansbury.
Oh my. Mm-hmm.
And lo and behold, the opening of the show, you know how they give the kind of laundry list of do's and don'ts, you know, turn the cell phones off,
right,
was done by Angela Lansbury. By the voice of Angela Lansbury.
She did it mic'd or she recorded it before?
Well, I'm not quite sure because though she was there, I mean, you know, people saw her, those who were in the immediate vicinity of when she arrived, such as myself. And then in the theater, once that voiceover was played before the performance began, people, you know, applauded just because the fact that it was Angela Lansbury doing a voiceover.
Right.
And then whoever was with her prompted her to stand up because she was then kind of suddenly being recognized by the people around her, so she stood up. It was a minute and a half standing ovation for this woman, which was amazing. And she was right down from us, like 5 seats.
So. You know, I frequently ask people not to do that when I walk into a restaurant. I'm like, I'm here, but please don't applaud, which I can assume is why they don't.
Oh, you're not.
That's amazing. Wow.
Yeah, and she was so gracious. She's 90 years old.
Oh, wow.
She looks amazing. She looks 75 or younger.
And
I don't
still
know how
on
you look
stage,
at that
still
age,
working sometimes. So, yeah,
yeah,
she looks really amazing.
Just
a wonderful.
True trooper. Anyway, yes, indeed. So, should we thank our sponsors before we get into this?
A very important thing to do. Let's do that.
All right. We'd like to thank our sponsor, Breakdown Services, the entertainment industry standard used around the world, providing the most professional means to reach talent agents as well as actors when casting a project. To learn more about Breakdown Services, visit BreakdownExpress.com.
We'd also like to acknowledge PerformingArtsLive.com, one of the internet's most prominent listing sources for the live arts in Southern California. We're grateful to Performing Arts Live for lending their support to State of the Arts.
We are indeed, and as you know, Andrew, we have planned a show that I expect to go swimmingly well today. As we talk to one of the stars. We have planned to talk to two of the stars of Cabrillo's The Little Mermaid, which opens this Friday, tomorrow evening, at the beautiful Thousand Oaks Civic Arts Plaza.
Mm-hmm. We will certainly dive in and meet them, but we do have a little bit of a change. We lost one of our amazing stars, but we have, of course, Lawrence here today, who we're going to get to talk to. Lawrence Cumming, who I'm very excited about talking to, and we'll introduce him in a minute. But more importantly, we have the artistic director of Cabrillo calling in.
We do.
So, Lawrence, if you have any thoughts on him that you want to get out on the air, you know, beforehand, we can quiz him with those a little.
Let me tell you what I think.
He's amazing. We love him. He pays us.
and a great artist he is as well. So we're very fortunate to have two amazing Cabrillo guests in the studio today.
Yep.
Well, one in studio, one on phone.
Exactly. And with regard to The Little Mermaid, this is the regional premiere of the show.
Isn't that amazing?
We'll be talking about. And Lawrence is starring in it with our other guest, Connor Guzman, who was to be here. But unfortunately, that didn't work out at the last minute. So we welcome Lewis. But how was your week?
You know, Michael, my week was good and exciting. I went to go see the reading of a new play. And it was fascinating to sit there and watch some of these creative minds work. They did kind of a talk back, and I'm always amazed by writers and kind of what they do when they dig in to find new subject matter and what they want to focus on. And this was a very interesting group. This group had a number of different sections of people in it who were from the same neighborhoods, from all over different places, and they'd come in groups of 5 or 10. And so you heard from people in Orange County versus people up, you know, in Santa Barbara area, how different they received the information. And you realize playwriting is essentially psychology. It's psychology 101 and who you're going to reach out to and what themes you're going to touch on. So that was interesting for me.
What was the name of this?
Plummet. The play is called Plummet. It's about a con man who decides to reform, and after a helicopter crash, he decides to reform, and he comes back and finds his former con man wife who is still in the game. She's still conning people, and he tries to talk her out of it, and it's kind of become an addiction for her. And it was interesting to talk to or hear the audience talk back to the director a little bit about what could be highlighted and kind of the themes of, you know, coming back to a life that you want to get away from, but you're still stuck in it. And that was fascinating. That was a really cool thing to hear.
There's a television series that's new this year that is of that theme, and it's called The Catch. Hmm. Have you seen it?
Have
you
heard of it? I have not seen it.
It is so wonderful. It is a very interestingly written and very well acted, and I can't even recall who the stars are name wise because they're new to television.
Am I one of them?
No.
No. Okay. That hurts my interest level considerably, but I'm with you. I'm still with you.
Exactly. But it's very exciting. It's kind of James Bond-ish, you know, but in a cool kind of different kind of way, and it all takes place in Los Angeles.
So wow.
It's finished its first season. When it comes back, you should check it out if you like that kind of you know, drama.
Very much. Yeah. And you said the theme is similar, coming back to a life that you've tried to leave. Is that what it...
They keep... Yeah.
Yeah.
It's that's part of the plot. The big con falls in love with a woman who has an agency that unravels all of these kinds of situations and finds these guys and puts them away. But he falls in love with her.
Yeah.
And that's the storyline, you know, in weaving through his hijinks and stealing from people and everything else. It's pretty interesting.
I'm always fascinated by the way that ideas tend to come up at the same time, because that's very similar to this to Plummet that I was telling you about. It's fascinating to kind of hear. I mean, TV was invented by two different people at the same time. Radio was being invented by two different people at the same time. Themes kind of go around the world, and people think of them at kind of the same time, and how they manifest is always interesting to watch and see which ones continue on.
Good. Yeah, so lots of good stuff sometimes on TV that we don't expect it will be on TV. But, of course, we love the live arts, and that's why we're here. And shall we get into it with our first guest here?
Absolutely. Let's do that.
Should.
Our first guest is a native of Santa Rosa, California, who first gained attention when he received a scholarship to attend the prep school at the prestigious San Francisco Conservatory of Music. He made his stage debut as the tenor soloist in Handel's Messiah at the Davies Symphony Hall in San Francisco at 17 years old, after only 1 year of lessons. Upon graduating, he made his way across the country to the prestigious Carnegie Mellon University on a full-merit scholarship, where he then transferred to the Manhattan School of Music. Performing extensively in musical theater as well as many other genres, some of his credits include the Broadway National Revival tour of Jesus Christ Superstar with Sebastian Bach, the National Tour of Camelot, where he understudied and performed the role of Merlin to Lou Diamond Phillips' King Arthur, a tour of Porgy and Bess, playing the role of Sportin' Life, and numerous productions of Smokey Joe's Cafe, where he won 2 ITL Theater Awards for Best Actor in a Musical. On screen, he has played a number of roles and appeared in the mega-hit Pirates of the Caribbean, At the World's End, which is Pirates of the Caribbean 3, of course, in which he can also be found on the sound recording. And appearances as well include BET's Live from the Blue Palm. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Lawrence Cummings.
How are you, sir?
I'm good. How are you guys?
I am good. I'm
tired from reading your bio, my friend. I need to do my push-ups each morning, man. Good to have you here, Lawrence. Thank you for joining us. You are working with one of our favorite companies. I love Cabrillo. I love what they do. I love the people behind it. But more than anything, I love that they are consistently dedicated to giving me shows that I can take my 5 and my 7-year-old kids to. There's something so amazing to watch children in live theater leaning forwards in their seats. A movie they've seen 100 times where they lean back and zone out on the television. But when they see live performers, they lean forward, they start getting engaged. Yes. You watch them come to life, and I love that.
Well, certainly Mary Poppins did great things for Cabrillo Music Theater just a couple of years ago, and I'm sure Little Mermaid will just follow right in its footsteps.
That's right.
Paul Strolley was definitely a part of that.
And I assume that's the main reason for their success. I think Paul would agree. Don't you agree?
Paul would agree, yes. I'm not sure about Lewis, but, yes, of course. Paul Strolley, for your information, was preceded Andrew on this radio program up until just very recently, and he and his lovely wife moved back to Chicago.
Okay.
So
doing great things back there, as a
matter
of fact.
Yes, he is. Yeah. He actually has become a bigger fish in a smaller sea back there.
There you go.
And I know, of course, Cabrillo was one of his favorite.
Little Mermaid already.
This is going swimmingly well already.
That's right.
We got more to go.
I know Cabrillo was one of his favorite companies to work with. How have you enjoyed working with them? How's Lewis and that group over there?
It's been great working over there. Everyone is so nice. And it's Thousand Oaks is... I'm living up there right now, and it is just beautiful. It's like L.A. with nice people.
And that's my new Facebook status for the day.
Thousand Oaks is L.A. with nice people. You just feel like you can get everywhere there without traffic, and it feels like a nice, clean, great town.
You really feel removed from Los Angeles that sense. Those rolling hills and all of that beautiful scenery.
And you get the breeze from the ocean. It's it's beautiful over there.
Yeah. Which is why it's so great that Cabrillo's doing what they're doing. They really are bringing Broadway to a place that has none of the big city problems, or at least very few of the big city problems. Yeah. Traffic is so much easier. Parking.
Hopefully it'll remain that way.
Right. You go to the Civic Arts Plaza and you park there and you walk 2 minutes to get to your seats and you think, this is nothing like what I deal with anywhere else in the country. So that's a nice thing. I like that a lot.
Do you feel that the by comparison, I guess you really can't judge this because you haven't opened until tomorrow night, but I was going to say about the audiences, but in generally speaking, do you feel that the audiences at Thousand Oaks are different from the audiences here in Los Angeles as far as being receptive?
You know, it's interesting. I've always found that Cabrillo gives such stellar work that, I mean, people really do respond very well to Cabrillo, and so it's tough to judge there, but from other shows I've seen at the Civic Arts Plaza, I think you do get a little more of a laid-back audience. It's interesting to watch how they clap and how they applaud at different sections. When you're in LA, there's very much kind of an edge of your seat sort of thing where everybody's tense from coming in there and they're, okay, let's sit down. You get to Cabrillo, or you get to the Civic Arts Plaza, and you sit back in your seat and you kind of relax. And I've always enjoyed that. I know when we saw a funny thing happen on the way to the Forum, I got in there and I remember being so relaxed. I was able to sit back in my seat. Michael and I got to talking and a half hour passed and I had no idea I never feel that way in Los Angeles, although great theater in LA, of course, but I'm always
in the Share Forum. Have you seen that theater?
Great little theater.
The Share Forum, which is adjacent to your theater.
I haven't.
Lovely.
Because, you know, we've been in tech for this whole last week.
Blinders on.
Exactly. Right? Blinders and claws and all kinds of things. Because, you know, people are flying. People are, you know, people are on hoverboards. People are, you know, there's just a lot going on.
And that's just in the green room.
Tell us
exactly.
Tell us about your character that you're playing, because you're kind of the royal court
composer. I'm the court composer. Yeah. I'm like the Black Mozart. That's what I call myself. When you see my costume, it'll make sense.
Mozart wasn't black.
I saw a picture.
Yeah, no, he wasn't. Okay, he could have been. Who knows? No, just kidding. We know. But I'm the court composer, and you know, I compose for King Triton. I'm kind of like his right hand man. And then, you know, Ariel is just, she is his youngest daughter, and she's just going around, swimming around, doing things she shouldn't be doing. She's late to everything. And because she's the youngest and his wife has died, he views her as like the last child. So he basically just lets her do anything. But now, since she's been doing all of these bad things, and I give him the idea that she needs to be followed, he's like, okay, you're the one to do it. And that's not good because I know this girl is going to be
What does his father consider bad that she's doing?
She is going up to the surface.
Oh.
You know, and
she's trying to become a woman, right?
Well, she's going to the surface and just kind of swimming around places that she shouldn't be. And, you know, he thinks that, you know, the people above, that humans actually killed his wife because that's what he was told. And so he doesn't like humans. He doesn't want her, any of his daughters next to humans. And when she goes up to the surface, you know, there's nets. He says there's nets and harpoons. He's like, you know, you could get killed like your mother. Mm-hmm. And that's why he's very worried about her. So he basically tells me to follow her, and that's not a good idea. Because for me, I'm thinking she's going to get in a lot of trouble and I'm going to die. He's going to kill me with that Triton.
And as a father of a daughter, I would like to go ahead and advocate how strongly I identify with this man trying to keep his daughter from growing up. Man, oh man. It's so funny. The themes in Little Mermaid, I mean, they're obviously fun and silly, but there's a whole lot of really serious stuff in there. You know, what dangers do you let your children go to? And yeah, it's a very serious show. Yeah.
And Triton is played by David Engel.
Yes.
Who is a wonderful, wonderful friend of State of the Arts and also a very prominent performer here in the Southern California area. And certainly a star at Cabrillo.
Absolutely, absolutely.
And Larry Rabin, one of the greatest guys, wonderful director.
Great director.
Yes, he is.
And a friend of State of the Arts as well.
Yes, indeed. And, you know, I think Larry and David as performers as well. Larry's a wonderful
great performer.
But that's why he's a great director, because he is a performer. And I think that he understands, he speaks the same language.
Right? Exactly.
Or sometimes it's not always like that with directors that haven't, or perhaps were performers at one point, many years ago, but never really pursued that aspect of it. It's a difference.
Yeah. Now, Lawrence, you've done this show a number of times. Is that correct? This isn't your first performance
of Sebastian? Yes, I did the regional premieres when it went off of Broadway. Disney gave it to three different theaters, and I did it at two of them.
Wow.
Which was?
Which was at Tubacon and at Musical Theater of Wichita.
Hmm. Both significant venues in this country.
So,
how was it at Tuacon, though? I mean, you're working outside.
Yeah, you're working outside. It was hot, but there was
strange.
Little Mermaid worked very well there because of the outdoor aspect and the fact that they have water, you know, capabilities and water curtains and things that you can do outside that you can't do inside.
Right.
So, you know, it was definitely, I mean, all my experiences, whether it's been outside or inside, have been very interesting because of, you know, the different constraints you have and the different ideas that people get, you know, from what you can do in a theater, whether it's outside or inside, and how they bring this underwater world to life, you know, with all these creatures.
Yeah. So did you do just that show at Tuacon, or were you involved in their whole season?
At Tuacon, the first time I did, we did that and we did Grease. And so I was Johnny Casino. I was the coolest kid in high school. So that was
naturally
fun. But yeah.
Very good.
Now, how have you compared working at the Civic Arts Plaza compared to the other venues? Similar? Is it a similar working experience?
It's definitely a similar working experience. It's very nice. I mean, I've worked a lot of different theaters here in L.A., and everyone here in L.A., the L.A. theater is very nice, and it's very small. Everyone I've worked with has always been just amazing and very sweet. And so, like, working here, I've heard great things about it, and all the great things are true.
Yeah. You know, I don't know if you know this, but the Civic Arts Plaza, Michael, I think you've said this a couple of times, it's one of the largest theater complexes
between
here in San Francisco. Is that correct?
Between where it's located in San Francisco.
It's a very nice theater.
It's also the former site of Jungle Land, which was the first amusement park. Yeah, so the MGM Lion, I believe, was retired there, and I think there was rumors that he was still buried on the property. Jungle Land was essentially...
Right where the Civic Arts Plaza?
Yes.
Exactly. That was the land. Jungle Land for years and years and years. Louis Goebel was one of the locals who started that there, and in fact, he had the idea that the Thousand Oaks Boulevard was one day going to be the biggest road in the country, and it eventually became the 101, essentially. So he was right, but unfortunately, he got it just a little bit wrong there, and he started this amusement park way out in the middle of nowhere. Thousand Oaks back then in the 20s was, you know, as far as you could go, and he had animals, big cats, as well as, I think, bears at one time, and eventually that property was sold, and the city owned it, and then it eventually became the Thousand Oaks Civic Arts Plaza.
Yes.
Isn't that amazing?
Where did you get all that
information? I actually just made it up right now.
Did you?
No, I heard it all on my first tour through the theater.
There's a plaque down there. I've lived and worked near that area for a number of years. Of course, you know, I did Shakespeare and the Beatles up there, and I do Christmas Carol up there every year for past decade now at the Civic Arts Plaza. So with a really wonderful group there, Thousand Oaks Repertory Corporation. And we will occasionally hear little stories. A lot of them were involved, Alan Hunt and Terry Fishman, were involved with opening up that space. And it's an amazing historical location. Really beautiful things going on in Thousand Oaks.
How long has our friend Cindy been involved there.
I'm guessing. Of course, I think it's been 10 years that she's been working with Cabrillo. It might be a little bit more than that. She started, you know, Cindy Murray, of course, okay. You've met. She started as, I believe, a dresser for Cabrillo, and Cindy has a wonderful business mind as well as a wonderful ability to work
she's
with
She's also
anybody.
Just a cool,
isn't she?
Classy
yeah.
woman.
Yeah. You know, yeah? She learned that from okay. me.
She takes care of everybody. I was like, what?
she started as a dresser and eventually became a producer with Cabrillo on the board of directors and a great group of people up there. So yeah,
she knows what she's doing and she does it so well. So absolutely. There should be more of her. Absolutely. But there's only one of her. We like that.
Lawrence, can you tell me a little bit about the role you're playing and kind of what you do to prepare for this? Is a silly role, but as we talked about,
it's a silly role, but it's a hard role because I literally probably sing 3 octaves in this.
Wow.
I've got to sing from a low B all the way to a high G
above
high C.
Wow.
So it's really because Titus Burgess, originated it, and his voice is so high that literally, you have to do something that's up there. Even
right.
if you don't stay up there, you got to do something that's up there. So you literally use your whole voice in this show.
Wow.
But it's also interesting because you have to use a Jamaican accent at the same time. But it has to be enough, but not too much, because if you use a real Jamaican accent, no one's going to be able to understand
right.
anything you're
right.
saying. So you kind of have to fudge it a little bit of English, a little bit of accent, so people can understand
can
what you're saying.
Can you give us a little sampling?
Oh my gosh.
State of the Arts with Michael Sterling and Andrew David James.
This concert was supposed to be the pinnacle of my distinguished career. Now, thanks to you, I'm the laughingstock of the whole kingdom.
And the fans go wild.
Yes, and that's what you're going to be.
That's great, Lawrence.
Seeing
really
when you go great. To Cabrillo Music.
I'm bringing my 7-year-old. My 6-year-old, my little boy now, is very upset that he doesn't get to go. He couldn't sit through him before, and now he can. But I'm taking Katie with me this time, and she is very excited. She usually dresses up as a princess for one of these.
Oh, they all do.
Yeah. Do you get a lot of that there?
Yeah, and everywhere you do this show, there's always the little girls are just, it doesn't matter what generation it is. Like, Ariel is one of their favorite.
Yeah, I
princesses.
Didn't mean her as much as me. I'm
oh, yeah. Well, you know, they do that, too. You know, some of the dads like to see Ariel, too. Okay.
That's great. Really cool. Really cool.
Tell us how you got interested in the business of show.
When I was, I grew up in Northern California, Santa Rosa, and we had community theaters there.
Yeah.
And so the show that got me into doing stuff, first of all, I actually did this... a friend of mine, my friend Jenny Rivera, she is an opera singer now, but she really got me in. Her family had this whole community theater thing, and we did a show together called Peace Child. And I don't know, a lot of people might not know this show, but Peace Child was this show when it was between like Russia and the United States, and all these kids got together to do a show to try to unite them. And so this whole show was about peace. And even, kids like actually went to Poland, they went to Russia. The show was done all over when I was younger. And that was the first show I ever did. And then after that, I went some voice lessons, and I actually started doing voiceovers for children's books. Because somebody heard me in one of these shows and literally was like, your voice sounds exactly like the guy whose voice just changed to continue
puberty,
this book
right?
series. And I was like, yes!
Cool. Wow, that's a great job. Yeah.
Yeah, so it was great. I started doing these children's books called The Human Race Club. And then my friend told me I should start taking lessons at the conservatory, and I auditioned and got a scholarship, and I started to take voice lessons at the Samson Conservatory as a prep student. And then there, I literally just started. Everyone's like, okay, you should sing opera. And I was like, okay. So I started, and things just kind of happened.
Did your parents condone all of this?
Well, first of all, they said they didn't want to pay for lessons. But then I got a scholarship, so they were okay. But
nice.
But yeah, after the first year and I started actually winning competitions and stuff, my parents were a little bit worried about it because I was a straight-A student. I was going to be a lawyer and all that. So they were like, I don't know about this music business. But after I started getting scholarships to schools and things, full scholarships and winning competitions and stuff, they were like, okay, we think we like it.
I see a career in this. That's right.
Yeah,
exactly.
Anytime a child can have a career, a parent
yeah,
is very
as soon
happy.
As you don't, they don't have to pay for college.
So
like,
true.
It's okay.
Ladies and gentlemen, we're talking to Lawrence Cumming here on State of the Arts, and he is one of the stars of Disney's The Little Mermaid at Cabrillo Music Theater, which runs, of course, this Friday, July 15th, all the way through next Sunday, July 24th, at the Thousand Oaks Civic Arts Plaza. Tickets are available at www.cabrillomusictheater.com, and that's, of course, theater with an R-E. Tell me, you got your education, of course, in different kinds of music. How is your other music styling? You've worked a lot in R&B and early music,
yeah, I've done R&B. I did an album with the Sony producer, and I started in opera, but right. Then, like, you know, I looked too young, so that's why I started doing musical theater and started doing that.
How did that influence you as you kind of came into some of these? Now, this isn't a traditional role, but there's a lot of traditional musical theater roles that, frankly, have gotten difficult to watch with the antiquated styling. How has your musical background helped you kind of pushing forward with a career in musical theater?
It's actually helped because, you know, they really do revive a lot of the old stuff, but then you still have the new pop stuff. So if you can make your voice, which some people can't, but mine just happens because of the way my voice teacher taught me, to be able to still sing opera and then to still go into something that's pop and to do that healthfully, you know, with a healthy voice, to be able to do that, it just widens your variety of what you can do. Mm-hmm. Now, sometimes the problem is casting directors only see you as one thing and they don't realize you can do something else. So sometimes you got to go in them for the couple of times to be like, I don't just sing this way, I can sing this
way. I'm not only a Jamaican sea creature.
I'm not only a Jamaican sea creature.
But you have to have a good teacher that can teach you that.
Yeah,
very true.
But I studied with one of the best teachers. I studied with Patricia McCaffrey in New York City, and she teaches everybody at the Met. And she's an amazing teacher who literally just, I mean, she is just an amazing teacher. I mean, the way she teaches is just amazing, and all of her students just sing flawlessly.
Wow, that's nice. Sweet.
And she doesn't believe in, you know, only if this voice type can only go to this note. She's like, it doesn't matter which voice type you are. Bass should still be able to sing a C. She was like, it's just where you feel more comfortable. So, you know, that's how she taught, and it was very great.
You realize how important good teachers are, not just
you will be music, thanking her when you win a Tony Award.
Yes,
right.
Yes, for sure. She has kept my voice healthy for years.
Oh, God bless her. We have a little bit of an arts calendar to do before our next guest calls in, so I'm going to kick that off.
Let's do it.
I had the pleasure of seeing, ladies and gentlemen, this past weekend, July 9th and 10th, Sam Harris and his critically acclaimed off-Broadway production, Ham, a musical memoir. It arrived with a perfect landing on the historic stage of the Pasadena Playhouse, as I said last weekend, and was nothing short on delivery of the goods, the kind of goods that would you could only hope be the case for the vibrant and very relevant Mr. Harris, who remains one of the country's most engaging male singer actors since coming into national fame by way of TV's original Star Search over 3 decades ago. Based on Harris's successfully published memoirs of the same title, the book turned musical is brought to life with seamless direction by Ken Sawyer and Tony Award-winning Broadway musical actor Billy Porter, with choreography by the always inventive Lee Martino and musical direction by the incomparable Todd Schroeder. The whole experience of seeing this forever young and utterly charming Harris navigate through a childhood fraught with struggles in the Midwest USA to the bombastic perils of show business, to finding himself in a successful marriage and the joys of fatherhood through an uncanny act of self-preservation and courage is, in short, the beginning of the next chapter in the life of Sam Harris, one which undoubtedly will be as ebullient and beautiful as he himself has become. For further information as to what shows are coming up next at the Pasadena Playhouse, visit PasadenaPlayhouse.org.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you enjoyed the show?
Very much so. I was very taken aback. I was very mesmerized.
Did you have any idea what to expect when you went in?
You know, just knowing his personality, and he and I have met a couple of times through, you know, other things that I do, but I didn't expect this. This was really laying it out on the line. It was really, you know, that confessional that was something that he probably would have liked to have done many years ago, mm-hmm. but simply couldn't for one reason or another, and those reasons are explained. He went through a lot of ups and downs, as performers do in this business when they lose sight of themselves. And, you know, the upside of the whole thing, of course, is when they actually can take the time and the wherewithal to regain the self-respect that they've lost and actually put it to work for them and pull themselves together and right. get back into what is called life, the life that they wanted, and the life that clearly has is serving him now in a bigger and brighter way. I think his message of self-content is very clear in this show.
You realize that artistic journey is cathartic yeah. in so many ways. It can be very, very painful, and it starts with a good positive basis right. and good positive things, like going to see live theater when you're young, taking your children out to see shows like Little Mermaid. You realize that that artistic journey begins when they're still in preschool. You know, get your kids out to see those kind of things, because everybody's going to experience something, and having the arts allows you to deal with it in a more effective way.
Right, exactly. And, of course, Great Gardens, I probably can't really go into it, being that we're going to have our Lewis Wilkenfeld should be calling in any minute now, so I'm not going to start that without finishing it, so we'll save it for the backside of the show. But it was an exciting event, and last night was kind of really exciting to be there at the Amundsen. And I've been there many, many times for many, many openings, but this one was very unexpected, too, you know, based on a true story.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So,
is Little Mermaid based on a true story? Do we know?
It could be.
My really little girl would, you know, absolutely believe it.
There's parts of ocean we just don't know what's there. So,
you know, they say the last great unexplored land on the earth is the ocean. Isn't that amazing? Speaking of which, we have someone who's familiar with the depths of the ocean. Shall we shall we say hello?
I think we should.
Go ahead, Michael.
Lewis Wilkenfeld, welcome to State of the Arts.
Hey, nice to talk to you guys.
You too, Lewis. Thank you for joining us today.
Absolutely. And we know this is a big day for you because you've got your dress tonight and you're opening tomorrow. And we've got Mr. Cummings here with us, and who's been holding down the seat next to him, which was supposed to be by Connor Guzman. We hope he's okay and will be just fine, which we're sure he will be for this evening and the rest of the weekend, right?
Oh, he'll be fine. It's just it's a tough week because we don't get enough time in the theater to really, you know, to do this without a certain level of compression. So everybody's running a little above their heart rate. And so, you know, I'm glad that Connor chose to, pace himself. And the show's going to be great. The rehearsal's going to be great. But it's a full week. What can I say?
Absolutely. Lewis, do you expect, and I hope you will, the answer will be yes to this. I can't imagine it wouldn't be. But do you expect the same kind of reaction from the Cabrillo audiences that you received from Mary Poppins, which was so phenomenal, your production of it out there?
I think so. I mean, I think, first of all, the sales have been great. The sales have been paralleling Mary Poppins. But more than that, you know, we place a lot of emphasis on character and story and relationship, particularly at Cabrillo. We're really, you know, we do all the special effects and we do all the, you know, the gaudiness, the costumes, the scenery. It's really a frame around the story. And what people pick up on in Mary Poppins, which was unique to Cabrillo's production in that way,
right,
was that this real sense of heart to this family. And I'm seeing it again with Larry Rabin's great work as director and our phenomenal cast, including Lawrence. They're really, you know, technology aside, they're putting their hearts on stage, and they're making it about the story first. And again, it's going to make Cabrillo's production unique and special. And you're right; people aren't going to come out humming the scenery. They're going to come out touched and moved and laughing and charmed, and they'll want to see it again.
And you've got some new faces in this show that are first timers for Cabrillo Music Theater, and our guest Mr. Cummings is one of them, and the other two stars, right?
Yes.
Absolutely. Allison Bagley is playing Ariel, and she's new to Cabrillo. Connor Guzman is playing Prince Eric. Connor's mom and I worked together 35 years ago before he was even a twinkle in her eye.
Oh, my goodness.
So that makes me feel old. And Lawrence, of course, and Debbie Prutzman, who I've worked with before, a longtime fan of hers. But this, I've been trying to lure her out to Thousand Oaks for years. This is her first Cabrillo show.
And she plays Ursula,
and,
right?
And then we have David Engel, who actually holds the record now for the most lead roles in a Cabrillo show. This is his seventh.
He seems to do that wherever he goes and works, right? He holds some sort of record.
Oh, yeah, hardest working man in show business.
And one of the nicest.
But it's... It's great to have him back, and audiences remember him because he was our star of Singing in the Rain both times we did it, and
along
well
with Larry,
the
correct?
Producers and the Andrews Brothers and White Christmas, and so it's been great.
Wow.
Well, well, well. Yes. You have got yourself back and Adam out there with a major production. Do you think the Disney people, being that this is a regional premiere, do you think they'll be coming out to check it out?
Well, I know there's been focus on the other production at La Mirada, and that was so I think Disney's been paying attention to that production, and that's fine. So I have no idea. I'm just hoping audiences will pay attention to Cabrillo's production and come see it, and I'll be very happy with that.
Well, now, Lewis, you mentioned some of the amazing stars that you have, talents who have toured all over the world and have amazing credits, but you also have a very strong cast of local people as well there. Is that correct?
Well, you're right, and you know this is one of my pride and joys, is that how many young people and how many local people get a shot to work with somebody like Lawrence Cummings and David Engel. This is important to us. So we got two of my seven kids from the Von Trapp family in Sound of Music are playing significant roles in this show. Michael Kennedy is playing Flounder, and Larissa Leininger is in the show, and she's playing one of the Mer sisters, and they've grown up on our stage. They started as little kids, and now they're playing, you know, as older teens, they're playing lead roles in The Little Mermaid, and there's many more. There's more in the ensemble. There's more in our leadership of the cast, and these folks are going to have great careers because there was a Cabrillo Music Theater and an opportunity to work with the kind of professionals that Lawrence represents.
You know, Lewis, I have such great respect for you. You know that.
And vice versa.
That's not what he said off the air, man. I'm telling you, I've got secrets now.
Yeah, I know.
We've known each other more than a few years. And, you are the 24/7 guy when it comes to the arts. And you are, whether you're producing it or you're directing it or you're doing something, you're always doing something that supports it. And Cabrillo Music Theater has a lot of those outreach programs. Can you tell us a little bit and our audience about
those
programs are?
We'll have two of them going on during the run. We're going to have our Animal Rescue Program, which we do once a year, one production a year. We'll have animals that have been rescued from these organizations lined up outside the theater before every performance of The Little Mermaid. Audiences will be able to come in and see and either support these organizations that do such great work, or perhaps find a new family friend and take them home and adopt. And then we're also bringing in 300 kids from the Boys and Girls Clubs. This is a program that's been sponsored through our Adopt-A-School program, and we've had some local organizations donate the bus costs, which is the big cost, you know, in addition to the tickets we give up. It's the buses. So that's next Wednesday. We've added a special performance. It's a public performance, and it's selling well to the public. It's a Wednesday, the 20th at 1 p.m., but we're also going to fill the mezzanine with all these kids, a lot of whom would never have seen live theater, and I heard you talking about the fact that, you know, The Little Mermaid will be the first show for a lot of young people, and you know, the next generation of us is going to come from people who see the show next Wednesday, and thanks to the these outreach efforts, they're going to get to see the shows. And then as soon as we close, we're going to the Entertainment Senior Centers. We do that every year. We'll be going in 3 days. We'll go to 12 to 15 different senior centers and entertain folks who can't get to see our shows. And then we're set, as you know, for our 10th annual holiday show for the troops and their families at the Naval Base, Ventura County. That'll be in December. We do that for the holidays.
That is so awesome. Didn't you bring them actually up to Cabrillo in one of the past years?
Yes, we've done this for 10 years. Two of the years, we moved it to our theater, and we combined it with a holiday show, and we've decided, you know what, the better gift is to go to them.
Yes.
You know, they're on the base, it's the holidays, some of them are lonely, separated from families, and you know, it just seemed nice to go to their home and entertain. So we love doing it, it's our favorite night of the year, and that's part of our outreach. We also, of course, make all shows available to all active military and their family free of charge. They just show up, show their military ID, and they get an evening to forget whatever they're dealing with in life and just disappear into musical theater. Oh,
that's pretty wonderful.
Well, and that is one of the greatest things about not only musical theater, but the live arts in general, is you get to go out there and you get to stop for a minute and have somebody else tell you a story that you know is going to help make your life a little bit better. I love watching my kids engage in it. I also like watching my kids see kids their age on stage with Cabrillo. And of course, one of the reasons where you're one of your biggest supporters here in LA is because I'm absolutely enthralled with the quality of Cabrillo's productions, and Broadway quality in a town like Thousand Oaks is so amazing to see. What's it like to find those young children, Ashley and Taylor Thomas, who I know is in your show, and see them go on to great things as they get older?
Oh, it's exciting. It's really exciting. We had one of our former kids come last night to see the show, John Lynn Saxer. She started as a little kid in Oliver, and I think she was in The Wizard of Oz. Excuse me. Now she's got three Broadway shows under her belt. It is tremendously satisfying when somebody comes in, whether they're 8 or 10 or 18 or 20, and lights us up. And you just go, wow, the future is right here. I can't describe it. And that's kind of why Cabrillo Music Theater has really carved out a reputation in two ways. One of that we're not looking for people who've always been doing the roles before. We're lucky to bring in somebody like Lawrence, who has the background of the show. But really, we have enough rehearsal time, and we're invested in the community enough to develop new, performers in these roles. And the other is what you said, it's quality. We're the ones in the building that, put on the shows ourselves, so we can follow through on quality from first audition straight through to performance. Mm-hmm. And then we can put our name on it. Cabrillo Music Theater, we're proud of Broadway in Your Backyard.
Absolutely.
Lewis, can you tell us about the new season, the 2016-17 season? What's coming up?
I'm very excited to tell you that. We've got three shows, all in the Cavalli Theater, the big theater. We start with Evita, and this is the first time Cabrillo Music Theater has ever produced Evita. It's been done, the tours have come through, but it's the first time that we will have done it. So that is tremendously exciting. We think we will be putting on it really a new generation of talent in a classic musical. Then we're off to Sister Act the Musical, which is direct from Broadway, direct from London, never played in the area before, so we're excited about that. And then we're going to end next summer with the only show we've done before, but it's been 15 years and the rights have been tied up all that time, but we're going to take our audiences back to Neverland with Peter Pan. So we got three great shows that between them really serve the entire community who want to see live musical theater.
Fantastic.
Wow. Now, when you say the rights have been tied up for 15 years, can you explain what that means to our listening audience?
Yes, when a show is going out on tour, it means that professional productions that are locally produced are restricted from doing the show. So, we could ask, in fact, Evita is a great example of that, too. We would ask the rights holders, we'd like to do Evita. They go, no, there's a tour going out. We'll let you know when it's over. So there have been a constant flow of tours of Evita and Peter Pan. And when the rights became available, we were able to grab those. But that's basically it. The folks who are doing the tours don't want to be competing with other productions in the same building or in the same city or in the same region. So that's really the reason.
Good. I mean, I've known that, but I don't think most people know that.
And it's interesting, too. Right. So you realize that you get to see a chance when a show like Little Mermaid comes out in its first regional production of this scale, you get to kind of watch it and say, those rights are now available, and people all across the country are getting to experience that for the first time, which is a really fun thing to see.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, you're exactly right, and we spent a lot of time debating what the term regional premiere means. We've finally decided it means this region. It's not, some people use it as a regional theater premiere, meaning it's the first time that any company like ours has done it anywhere in the country. But that's not true. It's new to this community. It will never have been done here. It didn't play Los Angeles. It played here. It will play here. It's, another production played down in La Mirada, and it was a wonderful show. And now we're getting to do ours. And even though it's popping up everywhere for audiences, they don't want to drive 2 hours to go see The Little Mermaid or any show, so it's new to our audience, and that's what makes it the premiere.
Absolutely. Lewis, we know you're busy, and it's a busy day for you. We can't thank you enough for calling in and sharing with us all of what you have, and we wish you an amazing opening weekend. Andrew's going to be there on Sunday
Absolutely.
With his little girl, and I'm coming the following
Great.
Weekend. So thank you, as always.
I'm looking forward to seeing you both. As always, we will all be standing in the lobby because we're local, and we produce here, and you will find me in the lobby. You guys both better come up and say hi.
Okay.
That's a deal.
You
Thanks,
got
Lewis.
It. All right, sir. Thank
hey,
you.
Thank you very much. And it's I'm just going to say one last time, July 15th through the 24th, padded matinee on July 20th, 1 o'clock, free parking, and we'll have a mermaid out front at that performance.
Oh, amazing.
I'll be there.
Thank you, Lewis. We appreciate right. you joining us.
All right. Thank you, sir.
All right. Thank you, guys. Have a wonderful day. Lawrence, I'll see you tonight in
college. I will see
you.
Exactly.
All right. Take care.
You too. Bye-bye.
Such a lovely man. He really is.
You know, it's interesting because what he said there at the end really is true, in that you get to walk in there and you get to see so many people who are involved with that. I'll walk in and I'll see performers who I've seen in other shows, and they sit there in the theater and the lobby, and they'll greet you and they shake your hand and you get a chance to have a conversation. I always find some of my favorites, David Gilchrist, there and say hello to him, or Cindy or Ray. And it's so interesting because you feel like you're part of a musical theater family, which is such a great group of people to
yeah,
be a part
David
of.
David Gilchrist is playing... He's in the show.
Yeah, let's talk about him for a minute. Did you know, David Gilchrist, I don't know if you've seen him in many shows, Michael, but an amazing performer and a dear friend of mine. But he had, at one point, an absolute career that was going to the moon in Australia that he started, I believe, from floor commercials. He sang opera in a little bit for a floor commercial, or a floor company commercial, and it set him off. He ended up doing cruise ships for years and years, Vegas for years and years and years. He was a headliner in Vegas, and now he's in Thousand Oaks doing theater with Cabrillo, and they're lucky to have him, and he's lucky to have
we
them.
We are
and
very lucky.
Vice versa, yes. too. It's amazing how amazing artists bring together more artists, and it really, the product is something we all benefit from.
What role does he play?
He plays Grimsby, which is Prince Eric's basically confidant, like, because, you know, his parents are obviously not alive. It seems like all Disney shows, the parents are always dead. I think that's like one of the prerequisites. I'm serious. I think,
right.
I mean, it's one of the Disney things.
Right.
They never have a mom or something. The mom is always gone.
Right.
Poor Belle falls into another chapter.
Yeah,
Disney.
I mean, you could go through all of them. Cinderella, yeah. Bambi, everything. All of them. They don't have moms.
Well, I know David's very upset about playing Grimsby. So.
No, she had a stepmom, but she didn't have a
stepmom.
No.
Well, Cinderella, but
yeah, that's true.
The prince had parents.
And yes. Snow White, of course, they send her away. I think the parents are still alive in Snow White, right? But they send her away.
That's a very
I don't know. She's living with like seven doors, so they're not around.
You know, it's interesting. I know David was talking a little bit online the other day about what a great experience this has been for him. And obviously, he loves the role of Grimsby and all these.
It's
good. It's really fun.
He's very good.
So many great parts in this show. Just iconic pieces where you hear the song and you
Chef Louie. There's just so many. I mean, there's just... So many crazy, great characters in the show.
And all those lovely songs.
Right.
Yes. Right?
And some
memorable.
New ones. And some new ones. The quartet is my favorite that's not in the movie. It's a quartet between Sebastian, Ariel, Prince Eric, and King Triton.
Wow.
And it's one of my favorite songs in the whole show.
Wow.
Fantastic.
Yeah. It's one of the great things that Cabrillo does is really bringing that out. And you get to see so many great characters and stories on stage live. It's a fun thing.
Yes, it is indeed. You know, I think I'm going to save the rest of the discussion about Grey Gardens for next week's show.
Okay.
And because we want to hear from Lawrence about, we have to baptize him, you know.
We should.
Does he know about this?
No, I don't.
Oh.
What's going to happen?
So, okay. He's inching towards the door as we speak here on State of the Arts. Before we do that real quick, just a reminder that Little Mermaid opens this Friday, July 15th, and runs through July 24th. Visit www.cabrillomusictheater.com for tickets. Get out there and see the show. It's in a beautiful space and a great cast. So,
exactly.
Lawrence, on this show, we have a tradition of asking performers, live performers, this is how I build Drama Watch, live performers who come on to our show to tell us at least one interesting thing that's happened to them that was kind of a baptism in live theater, that something that went wrong, an embarrassing moment, something that happened that reminds us all that we're in live theater and anything can happen. It's a very different art form. Do you have anything that comes to mind on that?
Oh my gosh, I'm trying to think.
Normally there's two guests here, so there's somebody else to cover for you. If you don't
I
have
know.
One. You're on the spot. I should have asked Lewis before he hung up there. I'm sure he's got a couple.
I would have to say, one time when I was in the ensemble of Jesus Christ Superstar, and I was like in the front of this thing, and you know, when you're a dancer and you're doing stuff, I mean, sometimes you fall. And I was just really glad I, like, fell, and I was completely disoriented. Uh-oh. I didn't know where I was. And I was just so happy that we all had on the same costume. So when I came back out, it was like I didn't want to go back on stage. I was like, oh, they're going to know who I am. And I was like, wait a minute. We're all wearing the same costume. No one knows who we are. But there's just, I mean, sometimes you forget a line or you forget to go right on stage or... You know, there was something in Tarzan that happened recently.
Oh, that's got to be dangerous.
That someone forgot to come on stage. And, you know, people didn't know what to do because it was a big part where people had to really just, it was a lot of, like, information.
Right.
And I remember having to lead people across. And, you know, we're all on fours. We were really acting like apes. And I had to say a line. And I was like, bye, I got to go. Can only help out as much as possible. But
you learn how to cover
quickly.
Yeah,
exactly. Just covering for things or you mess up a line. And
that was, of course, for 3D Theatricals.
Right,
that
yes.
Production reviews.
Yeah, which was a really great production. We had a great time.
I heard that all the way around.
I handled their publicity and public relations. So
yes.
I love that show. Devin,
audiences, did Michael do his job?
Oh, nice.
Audiences are good for that show, yeah?
Yes.
Yeah,
they were very good.
Fantastic. Well, you saw that.
I didn't. In fact, I went down to see Beauty and the Beast that they did. It was amazing. Okay. But I missed Tarzan. I was telling Lawrence, I've never seen the show live. So I have a very different perception of the show just from what people talk about it.
Spectacular,
yeah.
Actually.
I can imagine covering as an ape is a little more difficult than covering as Joe Schmo on the street, you know?
Right.
Acting as an ape and trying to cover. It's got
that
a little strange.
That was very hard, I have to say. The whole body contorting of really, I mean, and we were all literally moving like apes with the hands and going and, you know, it was, the choreography was great. It was great, but it was very hard on people's bodies.
Well, I know that Devin used to, Devin Archer, who played Tarzan, he would had a whole regimen of exercising before that show.
Exactly. And plus he was wearing no clothes
either. Exactly.
We also did Rent together at... right after that at La Mirada.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, that's right.
Yes.
You did. Well, it was a great production. Okay, well, right?
Right.
So the show of the week here, The Little Mermaid, which you must go out and see, ladies and gentlemen. We always say put down the remote and get away from that TV and take your family and go see something that is meant for the whole family.
That's right.
And in this case, certainly what could be better than The Little Mermaid? Which Andrew said, of course, opens tomorrow night, July 15th, and it runs through the 24th. And there's a special public performance, as Lewis said, on July 20th at 1 p.m. So don't forget about that. You have many choices here. Just go out and see and support the arts.
Of course, you can visit Performing Arts Live to find out some more about the great shows we've talked about
Absolutely.
Here today.
Absolutely.
Ham and Grey Gardens as well. And, of course, the wonderful shows going up at the Pantages and the Amundsen right now.
Yeah.
So we'll look forward to seeing you next week here on State of the Arts. Lawrence, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you, sir.
Fans going crazy.
They are, you know.
Michael, always great to see you.
Thank you, sir. See you next week on the radio.
You're listening to State of the Arts with Michael Sterling and Andrew David James, only on LA Talk Radio.